Going Linux, episode 146, listener feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Whether you are new to Linux, moving from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about upgrading to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in going Linux.
As always, we hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
And today's episode is listener feedback. Hey, do you like reading books? Well, what about audiobooks? If you have an Android phone, we can provide you with a free audiobook. By the way, this also works with an iPhone, or if you have Windows or Mac PC. If you have one of those options available to you, then we have a special URL that lets you sign up for a free audiobook and a 14-day free trial.
All you have to do to get this special offer from Audible is go to audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. Sign up for a 14-day trial and you can get a free audiobook from Audible. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks on the internet. They have over 75,000 titles on almost any topic: fiction, nonfiction, science fiction, even books without the word fiction in the category.
Sorry, they don't yet have a player that runs natively on Linux, so to listen to your audiobooks, you need Audible's proprietary player on Android or Apple phone or a tablet, Mac OS X, Windows in a virtual machine, or use Wine on Linux.
And that web address is audiblepodcast.com/goinglinux. And if you're a Linux developer and you have been helping Audible develop a player for Linux, let us know. And in the meantime, if you want to use Linux to listen to audiobooks from Audible, get an Android phone. So how's it going, Larry?
It's going great. Hey, did you notice that we are listed in Stitcher?
Stitcher. I've noticed Stitcher. That's kind of a new service, and That's streaming audio of some sort, but I haven't signed up.
Okay, so you go to Stitcher.com, and there are two ways to get listed on there. As a podcaster, we can go in and list ourselves, or our listeners can go in and request that Stitcher list us, and that's what's happened. That latter thing has happened.
Okay.
And, yeah, so Stitcher streams audio content into vehicle dashboards, something called a Sonos home entertainment stereo, and to mobile applications on iPhones, iPads, Androids, Palms, Blackberries, and so on.
Okay.
And yeah, so you can download the application for your mobile device from the appropriate marketplace or store for your particular mobile device, or you can download it right from the Stitcher website. And once you've added the podcasts, and since this is streaming radio as well that you want to listen to, they get added to the list, and you can listen right from your device. And you can also go to a browser and listen as well, but you have to add the channels and so on. Last time I checked, you have to add the channels from your mobile device. It's really meant to be mobile streaming.
Let's see. I'm looking at the Stitcher site right now.
Uh-huh.
And as we speak, I'm not going to find my way around it. There's a lot of stuff to fill in.
Yep.
But it looks interesting.
Yeah, so I signed up as a listener and found that Going Linux is on there, as well as every other podcast that I listen to, plus a bunch of radio stations that I was now able to listen to, and a bunch more podcasts that I don't listen to. So, Tom, what's going on with you? Have you had any luck with finding an alternative to Skype for your home phone?
I've been exploring Ekiga, that's E-K-I-G-A, software package, and as an alternative to Skype, it's not working for me so far. I'm having a little trouble with hardware. It's not seeing my headset, or at least the first time I tried it, it didn't see my headset. So I'll be going back to knock on that door again and see if I can figure out what's going on there.
Okay, so that was listener Jeff that recommended you try out Ekiga.
Right.
Yeah, so I know you've been bouncing back and forth on email with him.
Right.
No luck yet, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of luck. Just hardware problems.
Well, I'm sure that you'll find something eventually, Tom, and maybe some of our other listeners will have some suggestions as well.
So let's get to our feedback, listener feedback.
Sure. Before we get into our voicemail and email, I received a Skype chat message from Bill. And Bill said, while doing a fresh install of Ubuntu 11.04, I was reading and ran across this and thought you might like it. And he sent a link to swiffy.googlelabs.com. swiffy.googlelabs.com.
Now that's Bill, our chief executive minion, by the way.
Yes, thank you, Bill.
What Swiffy does is it converts Flash SWF files into HTML5. So you can reuse Flash content on devices that don't have Flash players, like iPhones, iPads, and such.
And those other iDevices, yes.
Yeah. However, I read that Google Labs is going away.
Yeah, Google Labs is going away. I don't know what I'm going to do, Tom.
That was a fun little playground.
Yeah, so I don't know whether that means that Swiffy Labs is going away as well.
I don't know.
When you go on to the URL that Bill provided us, it actually says, when I'm opening it in Firefox 5 here, your browser may not support Swiffy's output correctly. You need a WebKit browser, such as Chrome or Safari for the gallery and previews to be displayed correctly. So Google says you need to use their browser. What a surprise.
Well, it's a great browser. I use it.
Yeah, it's great.
Let me tell you about a feature that I just found out about. I heard about it, but hadn't tried it, and it just works beautiful. All right, I'm going to google.com right now, and there it is. And in the bar where you would type your query or your subject, there's a little picture of a microphone. So I'm going to click on that microphone, and then instead of typing anything, I'm going to say Going Linux. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to click Going Linux. Oh, there it is, Going Linux.
Okay.
And the first thing that comes back is Going Linux. Now, you have to speak clearly and correctly, and I don't know how it's going to handle accents or languages other than English, but it's pretty cool for us lazy people that don't want to type.
Well, and I just tried it in the Chromium browser, and I see it's not on the awesome bar, which is where you type in your URL, but rather when you go to the Google website, it's where you search.
Right, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, so you have to go to www.google.com.
Right, right.
And it has to be on the Chrome or Chromium browser, because
right.
When I'm looking at it in Firefox, the little microphone doesn't show up. I have noticed that shows up on my Android phone and my Android tablet, so they make this feature available to anything Googish.
Googish.
Yes, apparently. So, if you're using something other than Chrome browser, maybe it'll work on Safari. I don't know. But, those guys over at Google.
It's not world-changing. It's just nifty.
It is. It is. And hopefully they're honing their speech recognition skills.
Right.
So that one day we will have a voice-operated computer. Won't that be cool?
Mind-operated.
Oh. Huh? You gotta get the implants working first.
Yeah.
Okay, anyhow, are we sufficiently rabbit-holed on that one?
I think so.
Okay, so let's get into our voicemail. Tom, our first one is from Anonymous.
Oh.
Yeah.
Lots of people looking for them.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not sure it's the same folks, though.
Oh, all right.
So this was somebody calling from their iPod. So let's take a listen.
Yeah, I'm calling from my iPod. And I just want to say I love your show. Keep up the good work. Oh, my battery's dying. Bye.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sorry your battery was dying.
Yep.
But thanks for the compliment.
Yeah, thanks very much. And next up, Paul from Texas sends us this.
Hi, Larry and Tom. This is Paul from Texas. I have enjoyed listening to your show and have been listening for several months. I have experienced several distributions of Linux and decided on Ubuntu mainly because of its wide distribution, popularity, and great community support on the forums. I used Ubuntu 10.04 for about 6 months and Ubuntu 10.11 for just a brief period of time, and I really liked it. Audacity seemed to be a little difficult to run as I could not easily select input devices and record from stereo mix as I had in Windows, but I found a workaround in Ubuntu forum. But since I've been listening to your commentary on the Unity interface in Ubuntu 11, I decided to try Mint 11, and I really love it. The look and feel is really great. I installed the 32-bit version on a Dell Optiplex 280GX, and it works very nicely. I'm running 512 megabytes of system RAM, and I need to upgrade to about 2 gigabytes. Tom, I used your suggestion for the Plop software, and it works like a charm. I installed Mint 11 from my USB stick, and I love it. I encourage your listeners to give Mint 11 a try, and here's why. Everything worked well after installation. Skype works great. Audio sounds wonderful. I was able to set up a cheap JWin Windows webcam in Skype. I found a neat piece of software in Synaptic called V, as in Victor, 4L2, and the Video for Linux control panel available in the repository. It will turn almost any webcam into a Linux Skype-compatible webcam. This saved me more money. The Audacity problems I experienced in Ubuntu, albeit on another computer, a Gigabyte mainboard with sound, onboard sound, did not replicate in Audacity in Mint 11. I had multiple choices of audio input devices and was able to record stereo mix off the sound card with just a selection of another audio driver listed in the dropdown when I clicked on the input on the mic input icon. I think I'm hooked on Linux Mint now. Thanks for your help on the show.
Okay, Paul, well, thank you very much for the feedback. And Larry, you're running Mint now too, right? 11?
Yes, I am. I'm not running Mint 11. I'm running Mint Debian Edition.
Okay.
But it's basically the same as Mint 11 because it's got all of the same packages, and most of the way it works is very similar to Mint 11. It's not exactly the same.
Right.
But it's, yeah, because it's based on Debian rather than on Ubuntu, and it's a rolling release rather than a static release. But it is very, very similar in many ways, and it's working very well.
Yeah, and that problem that Paul had with trying to select input and output options in Audacity, that's, I think, part of the Pulse Audio thing. You have to go into your sound preferences and select your device first, and then go to Audacity, and it'll use whatever you selected in your sound preferences.
Right, exactly. And another tip is make sure that in the sound control on your distribution, the standard ALSA mixer control or whatever shows up in your status bar, that your input isn't muted. Sometimes that kind of happens spontaneously for some reason, and I'm not sure that's Pulse Audio doing that, but I have noticed that when I switch input, sometimes the former input is automatically muted, so
yeah.
I have to go back when I select it again and make sure it's not.
Right.
So just another tip from somebody who uses Audacity fairly regularly.
Yeah.
All right. Our next audio feedback is from someone else who didn't leave their name. So
okay.
We'll call them anonymous as well.
All right.
Hi, guys. I have a question about the message indicator applet that runs. It's the one with the email envelope. All the stuff that's in there by default, I don't use at all. I don't use the Ubuntu one, I don't use Evolution, I don't use Chat, I don't use Gwibber, so all that stuff can disappear, and I'm wondering if there's a way that I can manage what shows up in there. I do use it for checking email. I have a little applet that runs and checks email and gives me my notifications within there, so I'd like to keep it. And I think if I remove that, I lose my speaker icon. So I don't really want to lose it, but can I manage it? Is there an app that manages it, or is there a menu that I can find somewhere?
I don't use it either, and as a matter of fact, I've removed it entirely. So, Larry?
Yeah, I don't use it either, and I just ignore it. So
yeah,
I just let it do its own thing there. And no, I have had various distributions that show that. And you know what? I'm looking at LMDE here, and I don't see that it's there by default. I ignore it so much, I didn't even know it wasn't there. So I, at this point, I have to say I don't remember whether I have disabled it or whether it just wasn't there on Linux Mint Debian Edition. But
I think I wanted a little bit more real estate in that dock and took it out, or the panel rather.
Yeah, I know in Ubuntu it's there by default, and it does connect by default to Gwibber and to the other things that you mentioned. I have done a little searching, not a lot, but a little bit of searching to find out if you can make some changes, and I've discovered that there are some ways to do that, although what I saw was a little bit old, so I hesitate to give you links. So if there's anyone in our listening audience that has some suggestions, some recent articles or posts or whatever on how to change your mail client in the notifier, in the message indicator applet, or change your instant messenger, I'm sure certain ones are going to be supported and certain ones aren't. And
maybe you can right-click on it and find properties or something. I don't have it anymore, so I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, it's from two people who don't use it. You're not going to get a lot of good suggestions.
The answer is we don't know.
Yeah.
And our next feedback is from Steve McLaughlin. Is it an audio feedback?
It is.
It is. So let's listen.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Tom. This is Steve McLaughlin, the Door-to-Door Geek. Just to let you know, at least the first round of Mac Defender hits was not because you clicked on anything or downloaded anything. It was an exploit in Google image search results. When you would hover over top of an image, certain JavaScript would run that would expand the image and make it bigger, and that's all you had to do. There was no clicking involved or anything else. I think it was a Safari thing. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't, but I know it involved zero clicking, and that was part of the reason why it was so successful early on. No permission needed to be asked for or anything else. It just hover the mouse, image expand, click, you know, bango, you're infected. All right, guys, keep up the good work. Talk to you later. Bye.
Of course, Steve was commenting on our latest episode about antivirus on Linux. Yeah. So it's good to know a little more detail, since neither Tom nor I have a Mac.
Which isn't really Linux.
That's true. But we did mention the Mac exploit.
Right, we did.
Since neither of us have a Mac, it's not something we had a lot of experience with.
No, but that's interesting. Just hovering over an image would infect it.
Yeah.
Oh, very interesting.
Gotta love JavaScript.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, as I think about it, though, that could be an exploit for Linux as well. I mean, JavaScript is browser-based, right?
That's true. I kind of think that the response time to something like that going out into the wild would be a lot faster.
Yeah.
Since it's the community dealing with it and not a company.
Yeah, that's true. So I know that the Mac folks got that exploit patched pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay. And then they brought out a new version of their operating system. I don't think there was any connection there.
No.
All right, shall we get into our email, Tom?
Let's do that. You want to read the first one?
I can do that. As soon as I get this window out of the way. Okay. Our first email is from Hans, who commented on my description of Linus Torvalds' homeland. So Hans wrote, "I enjoy listening to your weekly podcast. I have been using Linux since 1994. Slackware was my first installation."
Ooh.
Yes.
Hardcore.
"Regardless of my long history as a Linux user, I occasionally learn new things from your podcast, like new utilities for doing certain tasks. In episode 144, I heard one of you mention that Linus Torvalds was a Scandinavian. I believe he is Finnish, or at least the Linux kernel was written while he was a student at the University of Helsinki in Finland.
That's right.
I believe Scandinavia includes only Swedia, which I think we would spell Sweden. Yeah. Denmark and Norway. But Wikipedia says that people tend to include other Nordic countries as part of Scandinavia as well. Great show and love your podcasts, Hans. Well, I hope I didn't offend anyone in
Got the country wrong, that's all.
But I'm one of those people who believed that Finland was part of Scandinavia, so I don't know whether I got it wrong or I'm just going along with the crowd, but I'll know the distinction going forward, that's for sure.
Yeah. And speaking of the university at Helsinki, shout out to Professor Timo Salmi, who taught me a lot in the early days of the internet. He ran something called Garbo.
Hmm.
It was lots of scripts for Windows, mostly for Windows, little programs and stuff. So he taught me a lot in the early days.
All right. Well, thank you to Timo.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we've got David. And Dave says, hi, Larry and Tom. Hi, David.
Hi, David.
If you remember, I was one of those who criticized the Computer America episodes when they started due to the long periods of blah, 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 and applauded you when you started editing it out. I continued to listen to the segments, as every so often there was a nice gem that would be interesting, but they were few and far between. However, it was trying my patience, and whenever an episode came up, I debated whether or not to listen to it, but gave in, as I'm a loyal listener and would hate to miss any episodes. Well, good for you. Then things looked up. Your editing became tighter, and Carrie came around and started asking smart questions and making intelligent comments. There was even one Computer America that I truly enjoyed and could even be called one of the best Going Linux episodes ever. And that was the one that included Jonathan Nadeau. He says, I even wrote you at the time complimenting you about the quality of the episode. But even I have my limits. And I'm sorry, Larry. I'll miss your appearance on Computer America from now on. With Carrie gone and his replacement with Craig's son, Ben, I give up. As my mother used to say, if you don't have something nice to say about someone, don't say anything at all. So, enough said. I'll now take a pass whenever your Computer America episodes are podcast. Well, podcast is now a verb.
It is.
It will break my record of listening to all Going Linux until now, but all things must end. I know I'll miss some gems from your lips or interesting feedback emails, but hopefully I'll get them on your other Going Linux episodes. As always, your faithful, now a proviso listener, the expat Canadian in Israel, David.
Oh, David, well, at least you know the third Tuesday of every month you have an episode of Going Linux you don't have to listen to going forward. So we'll miss you, David, at least on one of our three episodes a month.
Right, he's listening now, so that's fine.
Yeah, he'll hear this. But they have taken a very different turn
without
Carrie. I find that Carrie pushed back a lot, which was a good thing in some ways, especially after he turned around and started being a little more positive about Linux. And I thought at the very beginning, Ben was going to take on kind of the role as the newbie person interested in Linux, but he seems to be more interested in cheap shots at Linux and his dad and whatever. He's into gaming, and I don't think he's really all that interested in Linux. We'll see how it goes from here. I mean, I've only got two episodes with Ben under my belt. Well, maybe we'll turn around again, and David, if it does, I'll let you know, and you're kind of our quality advisor
as it
comes to Computer America, and I guess the quality isn't up to your standards at this point.
Wait a while, check in. Maybe things will change.
Yeah. We'll see. Okay, our next email is from Gordon, who wrote, when you talk about installing programs such as ClamAV, you may note that they don't scan for Linux viruses, since there aren't any. Instead, they scan for Windows viruses, so you don't send your friends nasty attached files.
And that's true.
Very good point, Gordon. Now, I have to believe that when there is a Linux virus, notice I said when, not if, when there is a Linux virus, that ClamAV and the other handy virus software programs will be scanning for those Linux viruses. So if you do want to be extra careful and install that antivirus for Linux now, you can do that. And as things get updated, you'll get the latest for all those Windows viruses and, you know, maybe the once-in-a-lifetime Linux virus that comes along.
Yeah, and I'm going to remain on the side that doesn't believe that's going to happen. At least it's not going to happen for long. If someone finds an exploit, the community's going to be right there to plug it.
Yeah, exactly. So use the free antivirus for Linux because you're not getting your money's worth otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, if there is an exploit, the first one to find it will probably be the person to plug it.
Mm.
You know, we get security updates all the time. Well, these aren't because security's been breached. It's because a good guy, a white hat, has found a way to possibly breach it and plugged it ahead of time.
Yeah, exactly. And if I'm the first one to find it, it won't be plugged until the second person finds it.
Okay, so next up from Justin. Justin commented, guys, Justin, you couldn't think of a reason to run antivirus on a Linux machine yet. Well, I agree you don't need one for Linux yet. But if you are in a home environment with Windows machines that passes files around, it's good to have antivirus so you can check files before sending them out again. Just a small point, but I think it'll help. Justin. Okay, Justin. We'll take that.
Yep. Same point that Gordon made, basically. And that's really the main reason for having antivirus on Linux, as you said. Our next email is from Bradley, who provided some additional input on Linux antivirus. We're getting a lot of feedback on that last episode, Tom. I think we hit a nerve or something. So Bradley writes, just for an easy way to update ClamAV, which the graphical ClamTK uses anyhow, use the command sudo space freshclam, and freshclam is all one word. That will update the antivirus definitions. Then just use ClamTK to scan. Though the command line interface is pretty simple, it's clam scan space dash r space then your folder or the file. So it is pretty straightforward.
Sure. Now I just typed sudo freshclam, as he suggested, and I get an error. It says slash var slash log slash clamav slash freshclam dot log is locked by another process. Problem with internal logger.
Yeah, now Tom, I had seen some input on that on Google+. Some of our listeners on there had provided some information on some forums. Apparently there was a bug. There was a line that should have been commented out and it's not commented by default. So I'll try to find those links. I can't find them right now because I can't find how to do a search in Google+.
Yeah, you go ahead and work out the bugs in Google+ and I'll join you there in about 5 years.
Yeah, okay. Well, hey guys at Google, we need a way to search for stuff. This is real nice, but how do we find stuff that was gone? You know, come on. Anyway, when I find it again, I will forward that information over to you. Maybe there's a solution in there for you.
Okay.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah.
So, next up, Jeff has a suggestion for me. He says, hi, guys. Hi, Jeff. You had a listener write in asking about what to do now that Skype is owned by Microsoft. You listed a lot of good PC-to-PC applications, but you forgot to mention using SIP, S-I-P, Session Initiation Protocol. There are a lot of good services out there, but installed on a lot of distros by default is the Akiga client. You can sign up for a free account to do PC-to-PC and pay for dial-in or dial-out numbers for people to call you by cell phone or landline. The SIP protocol is usable on all operating systems, and Akiga is just one of many free cross-platform clients. Check your distro's repository for SIP, and you will surely find a lot of options. Jeff. Thanks, Jeff. And Jeff and I have been emailing back and forth, and when I find a really good alternative to Skype that works for me, I will let everybody know.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I might just switch along with you. Our next book is, our next email is from Ilya from Ulyanovsk, Russia.
Ulyanovsk. Yeah, you took a good run at it.
Ulyanovsk. All right, we'll leave it at that.
All right.
Ilya writes, "Hello, Larry. Hello, Tom. Hello, Ilya.
Hello, Ilya.
I just listened to your latest episode in a bus to work and wanted to share this cool thing about installing different desktops. I don't know if you know this, but there is a way to install Ubuntu called netinstall.
Oh.
It comes from Debian, I guess. Debian also has this method of installing itself. And using Ubuntu for more than 2 years now, and trying all possible methods, I now find this method to be absolutely superior to any other one. That's because of the following key factors. A. You get the latest versions of all packages right from the start. No need to install a gazillion of updates after installation. I see gazillion is spelled the same in Russian as it is in English.
Yes.
And B, you can choose from a lot of predefined package sets. The netinstall folder is not so easy to find on Ubuntu's site. I usually go to our local mirror, then I choose release and architecture to get something like, and he's got a link that actually is to the Ubuntu.com archive for Natty Narwhal and main installer, current images. Netboot is one of the folders on that.
Okay.
And then there's a mini.iso. And of course, we'll have that link in the show notes.
Sure.
So that you can go there directly. You can put this ISO on a flash drive with UNetbootin and boot from it. I've also set up a NetBoot server on my desktop and booted an old laptop from it, as it couldn't boot from the flash drive. Setting up a NetBoot server is actually pretty simple and is well documented here, and we'll include a link in the show notes to setting up a local NetBoot server. So when you install from this image, everything comes fresh from your local repository. First, the base system is installed, and then, the best part, you can choose package sets to install over the base system. There you can choose all of the available desktops, a LAMP server, that's what I do as I'm a web application developer, and various other awesome sets. I think you can call it roles of this machine. You just check everything you need, and the installer gets all the packages from the repository and installs everything. Absolutely convenient. This method of installation also installs Aptitude by default, in contrast to the official CDs that don't install it by default. I never use apt-get, just Aptitude, because it manages dependencies so intelligently. I urge you to try it out and see how awesome it is. With respect, Ilya.
Well, thanks, Ilya.
Yeah,
that sounds
absolutely
great.
It does. And I remember when I first tried out OpenSUSE, which was one of the first distributions that I actually used for any period of time, they had a net install available as well. And in those days, you had, or at least I had, dial-up, and you had to set up your link to the server, and you downloaded the net install packaged directly from the server, if I remember correctly. So you had an IP address and the server name and the folder you wanted.
Oh, okay, sure.
And so you basically had to browse to the folder, and then you had to set up your connection, and then it would just download directly from the OpenSUSE servers. Sounds like what Ubuntu has done is taken it to the next level, and you download a little mini ISO that does all that setup for you and all the connection,
sure,
and goes and gets things. And I installed OpenSUSE on a computer that didn't have a floppy drive or a CD drive using the net install, and it went very, very well. Of course, with a dial-up modem, it took a long time, but it worked.
Sure.
Very
interesting. Yeah, so if you've got a netbook or something that doesn't have a drive on it.
Yeah, or an old computer that doesn't have a drive and won't boot from, it has a USB 1.0 that won't boot from USB. That would be a way to do it, that's for sure. Of course, you have to have another computer to burn the ISO, I guess.
USB 1.0 port won't read a USB 2?
No, that's correct. But with USB 1.0, that vintage of computer that has a USB 1.0 port, you can't boot from the USB port.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have that built into the BIOS at that time.
Ah, okay.
So it's usually 1.1 and later computers of that hardware vintage that will allow you to boot. So if you've got a really old computer, and I have one of those sitting on a shelf next to me here, I have my way to install stuff on there is I take the hard drive out, put it in another laptop, install Linux, and then slap it back into the computer.
Sure.
So that's one way to do it. And with Linux, of course, you can do that. With Windows, you try to do that, and it goes, oh, wait, you got different hardware. The video's not right. The audio's not right. Oh, my God. I don't know what to do. Linux, you just slap it in, and away you go. But this net install, that is cool. I really thought that was cool at the time. And now that it's available for Ubuntu, maybe with the next long-term support release where they've actually fixed all the issues with, what's that thing called again? Unity? Yeah.
Yeah.
Once they've got that fixed, maybe I'll try the net install. That'd be interesting.
I've been hearing better things about Unity lately from people that tried it and stuck with it and sort of like it.
But yeah, me too.
There's not as much hatred.
Yeah, well, until it stops breaking my ability to do podcasts,
right.
I'll stick with Linux Mint. We'll see how it goes.
And I think this is going to be our final email for today. It's from Roger.
Okay.
And he says, hi, Larry.
Hi, Roger. Hi, Tom.
Roger says, just catching up on your show, listening to Going Linux number 144, Computer America number 40, and heard the listener question about finding a DLNA server which runs on Linux. And he has a link to a comparison table of DLNA servers for several operating systems, including Linux. He says, I tried MediaTomb, but could not get it to work with Lucid. However, I found Mini DLNA very simple to install and use. I stream photos, audio, and video with Mini DLNA to my home network and my network-enabled HDTV. My son uses Myth TV to do the same job, but that is two whole orders of magnitude more complex than Mini DLNA. Hope this helps. Keep up the great show. Roger. Well, thanks, Roger.
Yeah, thanks a lot. And during the show, during the Computer America show, I had no idea what DLNA was. And we had some dyslexia going on. We couldn't find it in Google.
Okay.
So we finally figured out from the person who asked about the question in the chat room that DLNA was related to streaming audio in a home network and maybe beyond that. But Roger, thanks very much for that comparison. I know it's a few years old and it's been updated as recently as last year, but it still has a lot of good information in there. And if you're looking for something cross-platform, there are a few suggestions, and that mini DLNA might be something I try out for my home network. Of course, I guess I have to go out and buy a network-enabled HDTV. Maybe it'll be later.
Yeah. So you finally discovered that DLNA stands for what?
I forget. Digital link not available. I don't know. give me a second.
We DLNA. Can't do that.
Yeah. Digital Living Network Alliance. There we go. That's what it was. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah. And I'm looking at dlna.org right now, so.
That was our last email for this episode. And do you have a software pick, my friend?
Boy, I wish I did. Wait, I have a software trick.
Oh, okay. Let's go with that.
When you're in the command line in the terminal, mm-hmm. and you're running top, yes. T-O-P, everybody knows what that does. It shows what your computer is busy with. Okay, on the third line down from the top, it says CPU, and right now mine is running 64% because I got a bunch of stuff going. Mm-hmm. Are you running top right now, Larry?
I am.
If you press the number 1, it will show you both CPUs instead of lumping them together and averaging them.
Okay, there we go. Oh, I see now. Yes, and I've got 4 CPUs listed.
Really?
Yes.
How fancy.
I don't know. It's an i5 processor, so I don't think there are really 4 actual CPUs. I think there are 2 CPUs that are made to look like 4. Whatever.
Whatever.
But it's showing all 4.
Sure. How is that helpful? I don't know. It's just kind of neat.
Yeah, well, you know, along the same vein, I guess, is a software pick from me, and that would be Conky, C-O-N-K-Y. And what Conky is it gives you the ability to, on your desktop, display in real time parameters about your computer.
Oh.
Yeah, so you set up a text file that tells Conky what it is you want to display, and there's a certain format for things.
Sure.
And what I have on my desktop is RAM usage, uptime, the CPU usage, real-time graphs being displayed, and you can watch the little graphs move up and down as things go on. I've got the file system listed and what percentage of my file system I have, what percentage of my hard drive it's full. Right now it's 39%, and 91% of my backup drive is... is filled.
Yeah.
And I've also got displayed the IP address for my wired network adapter and my wireless network adapter and a little calendar.
Cool. And now when you run top, how much is Conky using? Does it show up?
I just close that window. Let me go back to top. T-O-P. And Conky. Where is Conky? Oh, there it is. It is using, keeps moving around on me here, Tom.
Oh, that's going to happen.
Yeah. Where are we? CPU. Okay, CPU, it's using 1% CPU. It's using 0.1 memory.
All right.
0.1% of memory. So it's not using a lot. Sure. However, the more you have it do, the more
I'm sure that's
and memory
true.
It uses. So, you know, if you're asking it to do a lot of memory-intensive stuff, it's going to it'll eat up some of your processing cycles. But at this point, on my computer at least, it's not using very much, and it's displaying all those different things.
That's
static
neat.
Values in text as well as some real-time graphs going on. Pretty cool.
I'll try it out.
Mm-hmm. And our next episode, Tom, will be another Computer America episode. Fair warning, David.
Yeah.
Until then, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information, detailed instructions, screencasts, and illustrations.
And please email us with your comments, questions, and suggestions. And if you have a topic you want us to cover on the show, you can use the Podcast Alley button to leave your topic suggestion while you vote for us on their site.
And while we're talking about Podcast Alley, I had another podcaster or prospective podcaster ask me about Podcast Alley, and their site seems to have gone downhill. I may just be abandoning that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're not updating stuff, and the ratings are kind of messy. And the comment section is really good, though, and we're still getting a lot of good comments from there. So maybe we'll keep using it for comments, but I don't know so much about the ratings anymore. It's kind of in a decline. If it were a podcast, it would be pod fading right now.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So what's the alternative? Podcast Pickle or one of those?
Maybe, or maybe Stitcher. I don't know. Let's keep an open mind here.
Okay.
You know, and if you're listening to us on iTunes, you can go in and rate us there as well. We won't see it because we don't use iTunes, because there is no iTunes for Linux. But yeah, feel free to rate us highly on there as well. That's where we
get
our listeners from, if you like. Anyway, you can send us an audio comment, if you like, by email. We'll play it on the show. Our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com. And our voicemail line, if you want to leave us a voicemail, is +1-904-468-7889.
And you can follow our show updates on Twitter and Identica. And the handle there is goinglinux, all one word.
You can download the episodes from our website, or you can use the HTML5 or the Flash Player to play them right there on the show notes page. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.